It's that time again on a Friday when AM Live presents another update from the coalface with Martin Creamer, publishing editor of Engineering News and Mining Weekly. Good morning to you, Martin.
Morning, Klani.
Well, firstly, that story that's been going on for quite a while now. The South African government has been going all out to ensure that platinum company Implats is being fairly treated by the government in Zimbabwe. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this has been revealed by no less than the CEO of Implats, David Brown, who said he's got to say that the government has been very supportive and needs to be, because we've got a bilateral agreement with Zimbabwe, and the treaty insists that fair compensation is paid for any assets that are traded there. So we have a situation where the Indigenous Affairs Minister, Xavier Kusukuwere, I mean, he's been engaging a lot of rhetoric and drum beating, and he's forced Implats to the table. But the in-principle agreement that they've reached there, I think when he analyzes it, he'll find that he's been outsmarted because, you know, of that 51%, if you look at the 10% that will go to the community, that is a normal transaction we do in South Africa every day. You know, the community gets these shares on the basis of vendor financing. In other words, Implats gives them a loan, which is either interest-bearing or non-interest-bearing. This will be non-interest-bearing, so they won't pay interest on it. But as they get the dividends, they've got to pay off the loan. Mm. The 10% that goes to the workers of Zimplats, it's the same sort of thing that it's vendor finance. They give you a loan and you've got to pay it back in dividends, but in this case it is interest bearing. So they'll have to pay interest. But the crucial one is the 31% that goes to the State Indigenization Board. And this is where Implats have outsmarted Zimbabwe because they've said, look, this has got to be in cash. It's got to be contributed in cash. And we'll only talk about this after you compensate us for the land that we offered to you, because we weren't going to use it and we thought as a gesture of no use, no lose, we hand it over to you. So when you compensate us for this, because you're not giving us credits, empowerment credits for that, then we will open up 31% for sale to you at a fair market value determined by independent professionals, and then you pay in cash. So, you know, that's a deal that I think the parlous state of finances in Zimbabwe is just not going to meet. And the first two deals with the 20% to the community, 10%, and the employees, 10%, that is something we do regularly in South Africa. The 31% is going to be the sticking point. And that is the point that's going to be dragged out.
So in other words, the minister, the Zimbabwean minister will go back to his office, and when he looks at the deal, he's going to say, well, what happened here?
Exactly. And he's agreed to it in principle. So it's an in-principle deal, and now the technical teams will work out the timing and the valuation.
All right, another news. South Africa wants to take a leaf out of Canada's book and save its ferrochrome business from collapse. How do we do this?
Yeah, you know, 40 years ago, the potash business in Canada was in dire straits, just like our ferrochrome business is now. There was an oversupply of potash, and they were heading for a depressed price situation in potash for a prolonged period. We are heading for depressed prices here. Although this ferrochrome business supplies 42 billion rand a year to our gross domestic product, and it employs 200,000 people, if things go on as they are, we're going to lose 80,000 of those jobs. And we're going to halve that contribution to GDP. So what they're saying is, in addition to this temporary measure of an export tax of 100 rand a ton, which hasn't really been gazetted yet, let us go for the longer term measure that was adopted in Canada by Canpotex to protect the potash industry. And brother, have they done that? I mean, that potash industry in Saskatchewan is very strong. I mean, we saw that when BHP Billiton, led by our South African Marius Kloppers, got a bloody nose when they tried to interfere with that system by taking it over recently. So if we can get the same sort of deal for our ferrochrome, we're now facing a big oversupply of chrome, because the platinum miners are also having to mine UG2, and they've got a chrome stream coming in from that. And that is the chrome that's getting to China. And that is the chrome that you can't blame the Chinese, you know, for using, because they then turn into ferrochrome. But they don't host any chrome. And they were getting a lot of their chrome from India. India said, no, hang on, we don't want to give you chrome. We give you ferrochrome. And they intervened immediately. And you can see the ferrochrome upliftment. But the South Africans then have stepped into that gap. And now they're supplying China with that raw ore, unbeneficiated, before it becomes ferrochrome. And that is what is damaging our business very sincerely. So they're looking out to what happened in 1972 in Canada and saying, look, why can't we model the ferrochrome business on this, where we give credits to people who sell their chrome to local beneficiators, and we organize a balance for the export of raw chrome. And in that way, we can not only sustain our business, but we can actually grow it and get more out of it. And it's already a big business.
Fantastic. Well, let's look at Sasol now. They're taking steps to generate electricity from neighboring Mozambique's natural gas.
Yes, you know, Sasol has been getting natural gas from Mozambique for some time now. And one of the promises they made when they started getting it several years ago was that they would also make sure that some of that gas was consumed locally inside Mozambique. So they are in the process of putting up a 140 megawatt gas-fired power plant, probably at Rosana Garcia in Mozambique. The feasibility study is well underway. And it'll be modeled on the exact same 140 megawatt that we've got here in Sasolburg. It cost us about 1.8 billion. And that was built by the Wärtsilä, the Finnish company. And we see it's going to be producing from 2013. So gas is something that Sasol is becoming more and more involved in. I mean, we know them for turning coal into petrol and diesel, and they do that out. But more and more, they are bringing in a stream of natural gas. They've had it in Sasolburg for some time now, and it's from Mozambique that they convert into their chemical streams, etc. And we know that they're also now involved with shale gas in Canada. And we can see, you know, the people who complain about our fracking, you know, in
Karoo.
You know, Karoo, there they're doing it in a first world country, you know, that really looks after its environment. We know that fracking takes place close to New York as well. So to stop us in the Karoo would be unfair. But in the meantime, you know, we've got Sasol engaged in shale gas activities in Canada and also in Qatar. They turn gas into liquids, quite a big plant they've got there. And they haven't forgotten their coal, because we see now they're just investing 14 billion rand in replacement coal mines in Secunda. So that will be something that will sustain like 4,000 jobs. So coal to liquids is a little bit on the back seat. They prefer the gas because it's like a bridge to the lower carbon economy. But in the meantime, we can see they are looking for a solution to the CO2 problem from coal, and they're still very much involved with coal in Secunda, expanding and making, well, not expanding, but replacing coal mines.
Yeah. Martin, as always, a pleasure. Thank you very much.
It's great to chat to you, Kalani.
Cheers. Martin Creamer is publishing editor of Engineering News and Mining Weekly. He'll be back with us at the Coal Face at the same time next Friday.